Oh, mind, let us go to the court of the Satguru so that he may take the boat across by uniting the Surat with the Shabad. This is the Bhajan Chalo Man Satguru Ke Darbar on page 250. The holy Naam of the Master removes sins, curses, and all the three fevers, that of mind, body, and soul. All the heavens and heavenly abodes are in the dust of the Master's feet. Only the Master knows his creation. His play is unfathomable. In the three worlds there is no support greater than that of the Master. Oh, dear one, the hails of Satguru surely give strength. With much good fortune, one gets the holy love of the Master. Saints, Mahatmas, and all the gods bow down to the Master. Hail, O Satguru, even Sheshnag sings your glory. O Master, whoever has meditated upon your Naam, their boat has crossed over. Now the poor Ajaib has reached your door. I am the guilty one since millions of births. I am your forgetful Jiva. O Kripalji, take me in your ship of Naam and take me across. O mind, let us go to the court of the Satguru so that he may take the boat across by uniting the Surat with the Shabad. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 250.
Chalo man Satguru ke darbar, chalo man Satguru ke darbar, Surat Shabad ka mil jod ke kar de be. चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार, चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार. पाप शाप त्रैताप मिटाए गुरु का पावन नाम, गुरु जी की चरण स्वर्ग और सुरदाम. पाप शाप त्रैताप मिटाए गुरु का पावन नाम, गुरु जी की चरण दूर में सब ही स्वर्ग और सुरधाम. गुरु की माया गुर ही जान अपरंपार, लीला अपरंपार. चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार, चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार. सुरत शब्द का मेल जोड़ के कर दे बेड़ा पार, कर दे बेड़ा पार. चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार. तीन लोक में कहीं नहीं है गुरु से बड़ा सहारा, सचमुच बल देता है प्यारे सतगुरु का जयकारा. तीन लोक में कहीं नहीं है गुरु से बड़ा सहारा, सचमुच बल देता है प्यारे सतगुरु का जयकारा बड़े भाग्य से मिल पाता है गुर का पावन प्यार गुर का पावन प्यार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार सुरत शब्द का मेल जोड़ के कर दे बेड़ा पार कर दे बेड़ा पार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार संत महात्मा सभी देवता गुर को शीश नवाते जय हो सतगुरु प्यारे तेरी शेष नाग गुण गाते संत महात्मा सभी देवता गुर को शीश नवाते जय हो सतगुरु प्यारे तेरी शेष नाग गुण गाते जिसने नाम जपा गुर तेरा उसका बेड़ा पार उसका बेड़ा पार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार सुरत शब्द का मेल जोड़ के कर दे बेड़ा पार कर दे बेड़ा पार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार आ पहुँचाए अब द्वारे तेरे अजायब गरीब बेचारा मैं अपराधी कोट जन्म का भूला जीव तुम्हारा आ पहुँचाए अब द्वारे तेरे अजायब गरीब बेचारा मैं अपराधी कोट जन्म का भूला जीव तुम्हारा नाम जहाज चढ़ाओ कृपाल जी मुझको कर दो पार मुझको कर दो पार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार सुरत शब्द का मेल जोड़ के कर दे बेड़ा पार कर दे बेड़ा पार चलो मन सतगुरु के दरबार
Oh minds Let us go to the court of the Satguru, so that he may take the boat across by uniting the Surat with the Shabad. 58 years ago, March 1965, Judith and I were in India on our first trip, and the World Conference, Third World Religions Conference, had just ended. And going over the events of that conference, I wanted to read once again the talk that Master Kripal gave as his presidential address. And this is what I had to say about it and what he said, reading from my book, The Years with Kripal. Of course, from our point of view, the big attraction at this session was Kripal's presidential address, which indeed was a blockbuster of a speech. He gave it in Hindi. The English version was made available later that day. Sethi, one of the master's corresponding secretaries, sat with us very near the front of the vast grounds and was prepared to translate the speech for us. He indeed started to do so, but unfortunately a man sitting directly in front of us objected strenuously to the noise, and Sethi stopped dead. Judith went down on her knees before the man and said, "This is our master, and we have come 10,000 miles to hear him. Won't you let Sethi translate?" But he totally ignored her, and Sethi would not resume on any account. So we had Darshan for the length of the speech, which was heavenly, and then got to read it later. And this is what we read and what the crowd heard on that blessed afternoon. Master said, "My own self in the form of ladies and gentlemen, we have once again gathered together in the historic town of Delhi. This time the Conference of the World Fellowship of Religions, the third of its kind, is being held at a place known as Ramlila Grounds, grounds made hallowed year after year by the performance of scenes from the life story of Lord Rama, who in the ancient epic age symbolized in him the highest culture of Aryavarta, the land of the Aryans. He is worshipped even now as ever before, as an ideal in the different phases of life, an ideal son, an ideal brother, an ideal husband, and an ideal king. And significantly enough, his life portrays above all the eternal struggle that is going on between virtue and vice, both in the mind of man and in the world around him, leading to ultimate triumph of good over evil. The idea of World Fellowship of Religions, as you all know, is not a new one. We have had instances of it in the past when enlightened kings like Karwal, Ashoka, Samudragupta, Harshavardhana, Akbar, and Jahangir held such conferences, each in his own way, to understand the viewpoint of various religions prevailing at the time, and invited the learned men of the realm to translate the scriptures of various religions in the current language of the people. In the present era, the idea was revived when in 1893 a Parliament of Religions was held at Chicago. The present forum was thought of by Muni Sushil Kumarji, who conceived the idea of instituting a World Fellowship of Religions, under whose auspices international conferences could be held and sustained work could be undertaken for promoting mutual respect and understanding of various religions. Our first conference was held in November 1957. In the Divan-i-Am, the Hall of Public Audience in the Red Fort. About 3 years later, in February 1960, Calcutta became the venue for its deliberations. I am glad that the fellowship has, during this interval, grown from strength to strength. It is encouraging to see all the delegates that have assembled from the four corners of the earth, representing countless shades of religious thought and opinion, but united in one common endeavor to find out the essential and basic unity of all religions, the common meeting ground where all faiths are one. In short, we are in search of the grand truth of life, the bedrock of all existence, no matter at what level. All the religions agree that life, light, and love are the three phases of the supreme source of all that exists. these essential attributes of the divinity that is one, though designated differently by the prophets and peoples of the world, are also wrought in the very pattern of every sentient being. It is in this vast ocean of love, light, and life that we live, have our very being, and move about. And yet, strange as it may seem, like the proverbial fish in water, we do not know this truth and much less practice it in our daily life. And hence the endless fear, helplessness, and misery that we see around us in the world, in spite of all our laudable efforts and sincere strivings to get rid of them. Love is the only touchstone wherewith we can measure our understanding of the twin principles of life and light in us, and how far we have traveled on the path of self-knowledge and God-knowledge. God is love. The soul in man is a spark of that love. And love, again, is the link between God and man on the one hand, and man and God's creation on the other. It is therefore said, "He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love." Similarly, Guru Gobind Singh says, "Verily I say unto thee, that he whose heart is bubbling over with love, he alone shall find God." Love, in a nutshell, is the fulfillment of the law of life and light. All the prophets, all the religions, and all the scriptures hang on two commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Questioned as to our attitude toward our enemies, Christ said, "Love thine enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father in heaven. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." With the yardstick of love, the very essence of God's character, with us, let us probe our hearts. Is our life an efflorescence of God's love? Are we ready to serve one another with love? Do we keep our hearts open to the healthy influences coming from outside? Are we patient and tolerant toward those who differ from us? Are our minds coextensive with the creation of God and ready to embrace the totality of his being? Do we bleed inwardly at the sight of the downtrodden and the depressed? Do we pray for the sick and suffering humanity? If we do not do any of these things, we are yet far removed from God and from religion, no matter how loud we may be in our talk, and pious in our platitudes, and pompous in our proclamations. With all our inner craving for peace, we have failed and failed hopelessly to serve the cause of God's peace on earth. Ends and means are interlocked and cannot be separated from each other. We cannot have peace so long as we try to achieve it with warlike means and with the weapons of destruction and extinction. With the germs of hatred in our hearts, racial and color bars rankling within us, thoughts of political domination and economic exploitation surging in our bloodstream, we are working for wrecking the social structure which we have so strenuously built, and not for peace, unless it be peace of the grave, but certainly not for a living peace born of mutual love and respect, trust and concord, that may go to ameliorate mankind and transform this earth into a paradise for which we so fervently pray and preach from pulpits and platforms. And yet, as we proceed, it recedes away into the distant horizon. Where then lies the remedy? Is the disease past all cure? No, it is not so. Life and light of God are still there to help and guide us in the wilderness. We see this wilderness around us because we are bewildered in the heart of our hearts and do not see things in their proper perspective. This vast outer world is nothing but a reflex of our own little world within us. The seeds of discord and disharmony in the soil of our mind bear fruit in and around us and do so in abundance. We are what we think and see the world with the smoke-colored glasses that we choose to put on. It is a proof positive of one thing only, that we have so far not known the life and light of God, and much less realized God in man. We are off-center in the game of life. We are playing it at the circumference only, and never have a dip in the deepest waters of life at the center. This is why we constantly find ourselves caught in the vortex of the swirling waters on the surface. The life at the circumference of our being is, in fact, not different from the life at the center of our being. The two are, in fact, not unidentical, yet when one is divorced from the other, they look dissimilar. Hence the strange paradox. The physical life, though a manifestation of God, is full of toil and turmoil, storm and stress, dissipation and disruption. In our enthusiasm and zest for outer life on the plane of the senses, we have strayed too far away from our center. Nay, we have altogether lost sight of it, and worse still, have cut the very moorings of our bark, and no wonder then we find ourselves tossing helplessly on the sea of life. Rudderless and without a compass to guide our course, we are unwittingly a prey to chance winds and waters and cannot see the shoals, the sandbanks, and the submerged rocks with which our way is strewn. In this frightful plight, we are drifting along the onrushing current of life. Where? We know not. This world, after all, is not and cannot be so bad as we take it to be. It is a manifestation of the life principle of the Creator, and is being sustained by His light. His love is at the bottom of all this. The world with its various religions is made for us, and we are to benefit from them. One cannot learn swimming on dry land. All that we have to do is to correctly learn and understand the basic life truths as are embodied in our scriptures and practice them carefully under the guidance of some theocentric saint. These scriptures came into being by God-inspired prophets, and as such, some God-intoxicated person or a God-man can give us a proper interpretation of them, initiate us into their right import by reconciling the seeming discrepancies in thought, and finally help us inwardly on the God path. Without such a practical guidance, both without and within, we are trapped in the magic spell of forms and minds and cannot possibly reach at the esoteric truths lying under a mass of verbiage of the bygone ages and now solidified into fossils with the lapse of time, into institutionalized forms, formulae, and formularies of the ruling class. Every religion has of necessity a threefold aspect. First, the traditional, comprising myths and legends for the lay brethren. Second, the philosophical treatises based on reason to satisfy the hunger of the intellectuals concerned more with the why and wherefore of things than anything else, with great stress on theory of the subject and emphasis on ethical development, which is so very necessary for spiritual growth. And third, the esoteric part, the central core in every religion, meant for the chosen few, the genuine seekers after truth. This last part deals with the mystic personal experiences of the founders of all religions and other advanced souls. It is this part, called mysticism, the core of all religions, that has to be sifted and enshrined in the heart for practice and experience. These inner experiences of all sages and seers from time immemorial are the same, irrespective of the religio-social orders to which they belonged, and deal in the main with the light and life of God, no matter at what level, and the methods and means for achieving direct results are also similar. Religious experience, says Plotinus, lies in the finding of the true home by the exile, meaning the pilgrim soul, to whom the kingdom of God is at present just a lost province. Similarly, Henri Bergson, another great philosopher, tells us the surest way to truth is by perception, by intuition, by reasoning to a certain point, and then taking a mortal leap. These philosophers have said nothing new. They have just repeated in their own way the time-honored ancient truth regarding Paravija, the knowledge of the beyond, the references to which in terse and succinct form we find in all the scriptures of the world. For example, in Christian theology we have 1. Learn to die so that you may begin to live. And St. Paul significantly adds, I die daily. 2. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life shall find it. The holy prophet of Arabia speaks of mautu qibla ant mautu, that is, death before actual death. Dadu and other saints likewise say, learn to die while living, for in the end, of course, everyone has to die. Thus we have seen that light and life of God constitute the only common ground at which all religions do meet. And if we could take hold of these saving lifelines, we can become live centers of spirituality, no matter to what religion we owe our allegiance for the fulfillment of our social needs and the development of our moral well-being. God made man, and man in course of time made religions as so many vehicles for his uplift according to the prevailing conditions of the people. While riding in these vehicles, our prime need is to raise our moral and spiritual stature to such an extent as to come nearer to God. And this, it may be noted, is not merely a possibility, but as sure a mathematical certainty as 2 and 2 make 4, with, of course, proper guidance and help from some adept, well-versed not only in theory, but also in the practice of the science of soul. It is not a province of mere philosophers or theologians or the intellectually great. I take just 2 instances to illustrate my point. God, according to all scriptures, is described as the Father of lights, Nuran ala Nur, Svayam Jyoti Sarup, all of which are nothing but synonymous terms. But ask any religious authority as to the connotation of these words, and he would say that these are only figurative terms without any inner significance. Why? Because he has not actually experienced in person his light, uncreate and immortal, self-effulgent and shadowless, which Moses, Zoroaster, Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, Nanak, Kabir, and others of their kind actually witnessed and realized, and taught those who came in contact with them to do likewise. Began like the practice of lighting candles, symbolic of the inner light. There is another practice in churches and temples of ringing the bell, or bells, and giving of azan by muezzin, which has a much deeper inner significance than is realized, and surprisingly enough, is taken to be just a call to the faithful for prayer. Herein lies the great hiatus between learning and wisdom, which are at poles asunder. For this, too, is symbolic of the music of the soul, the audible life stream, the music of the spheres, the actual life principle pervading, pulsating in all the creation. Without taking any more of your time, I would like to emphasize one thing, that all religions are profoundly good, truly worthy of our love and respect. The object of this conference is not to found any new religion, as we have already enough of them, nor to evaluate the extant religions we have with us. Again, we should shed the idea of drawing up one world religion, for all religions, like so many states, are, in spite of their variegated forms and colors, but flowers in the garden of God and smell sweet. The most pressing need of the time, therefore, is to study our religious scriptures thoughtfully and to reclaim our lost heritage. Everyone has in him, says a saint, a pearl of priceless value, but as he does not know how to unearth it, he is going about with a beggar's bowl. It is a practical subject, and even to call it a religion of soul is a misnomer, for soul has no religion whatsoever. We may, if you like, call it the science of soul, for it is truly a science, more scientific than all the known sciences of the world, capable of yielding valuable and verifiable results, quite precise and definite. By contacting the light and life principles, the primordial manifestations of God within the laboratory of the man-body, which all the scriptures declare to be a veritable temple of God, we can virtually draw upon the bread and water of life, rise into cosmic awareness, and gain immortality. This is the be-all and end-all of all religions, and embedded as we all are in the one divinity, we ought to represent the noble truth of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. It is the living word of the living God, and has a great potential in it. It has been rightly said, man does not live by bread alone, but by the word of God. And this word of God is an unwritten law and an unspoken language. He who, by the power of the word, finds himself, can never again lose anything in the world. He who once grasps the human in himself understands all mankind. It is that knowledge by knowing which everything else becomes known. This is an immutable law of the unchangeable permanence and is not designed by any human head. It is the Shruti of the Vedas, the Nad or Udgit of the Upanishads, the Sarosha of the Zendavesta, the Holy Spirit of the Gospels, the lost word of the Masons, the Kalma of the Prophet Muhammad, the Saut of the Sufis, the Shabad or Naam of the Sikh scriptures, the music of the spheres and of all harmonies of Plato and Pythagoras, and the voice of the silence of the Theosophists. It can be contacted, grasped, and communed with by every sincere seeker after truth, for the good not only of himself, but of the entire humanity, for it acts as a sure safety valve against all dangers with which mankind is threatened in this atomic age. The only prerequisite for acquiring this spiritual treasure in one's own soul is self-knowledge. This is why sages and seers in all times and in all climes have in unmistakable terms laid emphasis on self-analysis. Their clarion call to humanity has always been, "Man, know thyself." The Aryan thinkers in the hoary past called it Aram Gyan, or knowledge of the Atman, or soul. The ancient Greeks and Romans, in turn, gave to it the name of Gnoti Siaton and Nosi Taipsum, respectively. The Muslim divines called it Hudshanasi, and Guru Nanak, Kabir, and others stressed the need for apochina, or self-analysis, and declared that so long as a man did not separate his soul from body and mind, he lived only a superficial life of delusion on the physical plane of existence. True knowledge is undoubtedly an action of the soul and is perfect without the senses. This, then, is the acme of all investigations carried out by man since the first flicker of self-awakening dawned in him. This is the one truth I learned in my life, both in theory and practice, from my master, Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj, and have today placed it before you, as I have already been doing before the peoples in the West and East during my extensive tours all over, and have on experience found it of ready acceptance everywhere as a current coin, for it is the sole panacea for all the ills of the world, as well as ills of the flesh to which man is a natural heir through the working of the inexorable law of action and reaction. You shall reap as you shall sow. All of our religions are, after all, an expression of the inner urge felt by man from time to time to find a way out of the discord without into the halcyon calm of the soul within. The light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. But we are so constituted by nature that we feel restless until we find a rest in the causeless cause. If we live up to our scriptures and realize the light and life of God within us, then surely as day follows the night, love would reign supreme in the universe, and we will see nothing but the unseen hand of God working everywhere. We must then sit together as members of the one great family of man, so that we may understand each other. We are above everything else one. From the level of God as our Father, from the level of man as his children, and from the level of worshippers of the same truth or power of God called by so many names. In this august assembly of the spiritually awakened, we can learn the great truth of oneness of life vibrating in the universe. If we do this, then surely this world with so many forms and colors will appear a veritable handiwork of God, and we shall verily perceive the same life impulse enlivening all of us as his own dear children embedded in him, like so many roses in his rose bed. Let us join together in sweet remembrance of God and pray to him for the well-being of the world in this hour of imminent danger of annihilation that stares us in the face. May God, in his infinite mercy, save us all, whether we deserve it or not. Before I sit down, I heartily welcome you, my brothers and sisters, and thank you warmly for your kindness and sincerity in furthering such a noble mission that has brought us together. Now, a few days later, after this talk was given, Master gave a reception at the ashram, Sawan Ashram, and this is what I wrote about it. It began with a great reception for the holy men given by Master at Sawan Ashram and attended by all the delegates, both Indian and foreign. There were over 100 guests, many of them in yellow robes or other distinctive religious dress. It was an extremely spectacular sight to see them all gathered together. An astonishing incident occurred during this reception or tea party. One of the guests present was a yogi named Surya Dev, whom I had observed all week. He was an associate of Yogi Raj Vedvyas, later known as Swami Vedvyasananda, who was very laid back and jolly and whom I liked very much. He looked to me like the cowardly lion in the film version of The Wizard of Oz, and who was becoming a prominent and hard-working associate of Kripal. But Surya Dev was very unlike Vedvyas. He had a shaven head and eyes which were both powerful and fierce. He obviously had power, but he was also scary. At some point during the reception, this yogi lost his temper and erupted in a truly volcanic rage. I have no idea what about. Although I have too often erupted in rage myself, this was a new dimension to the whole concept of rage. He was literally foaming at the mouth and was in every way like a volcano. His power was emanating from him in waves, and everyone around was backing off, including us. Master saw what was going on and came over. He walked up to him, put one arm around his shoulder very lovingly, and put his other hand on Surya Dev's face and brought it gently but very firmly down to his waist. And as he did so, all the anger and rage drained out of him. It was just as though he had turned on a faucet. Then Master lovingly patted him on the back and sent him off. I had never seen anything like it in all my life. The next day I had an opportunity to speak with the Master privately, and I asked him how a yogi who had so obviously achieved power could be so vulnerable to rage. He said, "Ego is the last thing that goes, and until it goes, whatever power one achieves goes to strengthen it." Which, as I reflected on it later, is why the Masters emphasize love rather than power, and why it is so important for spiritual seekers to not identify with whatever spiritual experience or progress they may have, but to see clearly that it is all the grace of God. Also, why it is often in the disciple's best interest for the Master to keep what spiritual experience they may be entitled to in abeyance until such time as the ego is transcended. And, you know, there are a number of points in my life when certain things about the path become very, very obvious. And it's like those are turning points or focuses, you might say, foci, on, you know, what the Master is talking about and what he is living and what he is. And I would say, you know, on the whole, the conference was kind of a drag. You know, it was several hundred thousand people probably were there at one point or another. And the delegates, of course, were a very motley crew, really. But the two things that I have just read about, Master's talk and the event at the tea party at the ashram, stand in my mind like, you know, enormous beacons. This is what it's all about. I mean, the Master in the talk lays down exactly what the world is like, what his people are like, what is required of us, and, you know, in no uncertain terms. And it's very, very, very clear and very beautifully expressed. And at the ashram that day, just a few days later, 58 years ago, he showed what it meant to be a human being like that. You know, when that yogi lost his temper, I mean, I've never really been able to express in words what it was like. It was really like a tidal wave of negativity. I've never experienced anything like it. And it's like that whole crowd of people, you know, significant, distinguished people, some of them probably spiritually advanced. You know, we were all intimidated, totally frightened and intimidated. You know, what's going on here? And the master was different. You know, he was the only one who knew what to do and who did it. And watching him do that, walking up to that guy, putting his arm around him, loving him, and then taking his hand and putting it on his face and going down his belly. It was so incredible. And to watch the rage just sort of... And when he got down to his waist, you know, he just hugged him again and let him go. Nothing else. And the yogi went off as though nothing had happened. It was incredible. And I realized this is what being a master is the ability to do this, you know, to introduce love into the absolute negation of love and having it triumph. And that's something, you know, that is what he's talking about in his address. And that is what all of us, that is the aim for all of us. That is what we want to achieve, is the ability to introduce love into the very pit of negativity and have it triumph. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness overwhelms it not, is probably a little better translation. The darkness cannot overwhelm it, not when the light is really there. And that's what the path is all about. That's what our calling is. That is what we are meant to become. And it can be done. The light and life of God are still there to guide us. Master is very clear. It can still happen. And the Master is within us, you know, within each one of us. And he is pulling us upward. And it's there for us to take, to grab hold of. Thank God. Thank God for him. Thank God for what he teaches. Thank God for the love that is present in our hearts if we know how to find it. Thank God for everything.
Ra khoda pi havala rai dasme paaye man to hathi ho rya nikse kyon kar jaye.
Then he said that the path which goes to Almighty Lord's home is very thin. It's even 1/10 of the size of a mustard seed. But the mind has become very big like an elephant. How can he go there?
Kabir Sahib ki Kabir Sahib bhi kehnde hain khuda da raah rai to dasma hissa hai baal to vi breek hai kehn lage raah khuda pi haavla rai dase paaye aap kehnde ke man haathi hoya baitha hai ik kis tarah ide vidhi nikal sakda hai.
Kabir Sahib also says that the path of God is thinner than the size of the hair. It is even 1/10 of the size of the mustard seed. Since the mind has become very big like the elephant, how can he go on that path and go to God?
Isse tarah Guru Amar Dev Ji Maharaj kehnde hai ke Parmatma de ghar nu jaan wala jo rasta hai oh khande to tikha hai, wal to nikka hai. Agar je tusi itne breek ho ਤਾਦੀ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਇਸ ਰਸਤੇ ਦੇ ਵੀ ਲੰਘ ਸਕਦੇ ਹੋ।
In the same way Guru Amar Dev Ji Maharaj says that the path which goes to the home of God is sharper than the edge of the sword. It's thinner than the size of the hair. And you can go there only if you become as thin as the path is.
ਆਪ ਦੇ ਅੱਗੇ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਸੂਰਦਾਸ ਦਾ ਛੋਟਾ ਜਿਹਾ ਸ਼ਬਦ ਰੱਖਿਆ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ। ਆਪ ਨੂੰ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੇਗਾ ਕਿ ਜੋ ਰੱਬ ਦੇ ਆਸ਼ਿਕ ਹੈ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਆਸ਼ਿਕ ਹੈ ਜਿਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਦੇ ਦਿਲ ਅੰਦਰ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਮਿਲਣ ਦਾ ਸ਼ੌਕ ਮੇਰੇ ਤੜਪ ਪੈਦਾ ਹੋ ਗਈ ਹੈ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਕਿਤਨੀ ਨਿਮਰਤਾ ਔਰ ਆਜੀ ਆ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ।
ਸੋ ਦਿਸ ਬਰੀਫ ਆਫ ਸੂਰਦਾਸ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਇਜ਼ ਪ੍ਰੈਜ਼ੈਂਟਡ ਟੂ ਯੂ ਯੂ ਵਿਲ ਨੋ that those who are the believers of God, those who are the lovers of God, those who have manifested God in their within, how much humility and meekness comes in their within.
Jo vi mahatma sachkhand pahunchya hai, us de andar nimrata kamal di hundi hai. Guru Nanak Sahib apne Guru Dev agge kehnde hai, jap tap sanjam dharm na kamaya, seva sadhana janya har raya, kaho Nanak ham neech karma, sharan pade ki rakho sharma.
All the Mahatmas who have reached Sachkhand have a unique amount of humility in them. Guru Nanak Sahib requests to his master that neither by performing the japas nor by the tapas and neither by abstaining from the things, I came to realize you. I have come to realize you only because of your grace. And since my deeds are very low ones, I am full of faults. I have come to your refuge. Kindly take me in your shelter.
ਮੈਂ ਕਰਨੀ ਉਸ ਮੁਲਕ ਦੀ ਭਾਸ਼ਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਉੱਥੇ ਤੂੰ ਤੂੰ ਕਰਨਾ ਪੈਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਤੂੰ ਤੂੰ ਕਰਦਾ ਤੂੰ ਹੋਇਆ ਮੁਝ ਮੇ ਰਹੀ ਨਾ ਹੂੰ ਜਬ ਆਪਾ ਪਰਕਾ ਮਿਟ ਗਿਆ ਜਿੱਤ ਦੇਖਾਂ ਤਿੱਤ ਤੂੰ
ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਨਾਟ ਇਨ ਦਾ ਲੈਂਗੁਏਜ ਆਫ ਦੈਟ ਕੰਟਰੀ ਟੂ ਸੇ ਆਈ ਆਈ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਦਾ ਲੈਂਗੁਏਜ ਆਫ ਦੈਟ ਕੰਟਰੀ ਟੂ ਸੇ ਦਾਏ ਦਾਏ ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਸੇਜ਼ ਦੈਟ ਸੇਇੰਗ ਦਾਏ ਦਾਏ ਆਈ ਹੈਵ ਫੋਰਗੋਟਨ ਮਾਈਸੈਲਫ ਵੈਨ I was forgotten when I was eliminated, then only you remained.
Naath mohe ab ki der ubaro Naath mohe ab ki der ubaro Tum naath menke naath swami
ਹੁਣ ਆਪ ਆਪਣੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇਵ ਦੇ ਅੱਗੇ ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਆਜਿਜ਼ ਹੋਏ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਹੇ ਨਾਥ ਤੂੰ ਸਭ ਦਾ ਨਾਥ ਹੈ ਸਭ ਦੀ ਪਾਲਣਾ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲਾ ਹਾਂ ਮੈਂ ਅਨਾਥ ਹਾਂ ਤੇਰੇ ਅੱਗੇ ਝੋਲੀ ਅੱਡੀ ਖੜਾ ਹੈ ਮੈਂ ਗਰੀਬ ਹਾਂ ਤੂੰ ਦਾਤਾ ਹਾਂ ਮੈਂ ਤੇਰੀ ਸ਼ਰਨ ਵਿੱਚ ਆਇਆ ਹੈ ਪਿੱਛੇ ਜੋ ਮੈਂ ਐਬ ਕੀਤੇ ਹੈ ਜਨਮਾਂ ਜਨਮਾਤਰਾਂ ਦੇ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਤੂੰ ਮਾਫ਼ ਕਰ ਦੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਬੂਹੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਆਪਣੇ ਘਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਜਗ੍ਹਾ ਦੇ
Now how he has become humble in front of his master. He says that, O Lord, you are the Lord of all. You are the giver of all. I am the beggar of your door. I have come and stretched out my bag in front of you. Since you are the giver and I am full of faults, forgive all the faults which I have done before coming to you. And since I have taken refuge at your feet, you take me in your protection and you give me your grace.
Kabir Sahib bhi nimrata de punj. ਇਹੀ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਸੁਰਤ ਕਰੋ ਮੇਰੇ ਸਾਈਆਂ ਮੈਂ ਹੂੰ ਭੌਜਲ ਮਾਹੇ ਆਪੇ ਹੀ ਬਹਿ ਜਾਊਂਗਾ ਜੇ ਨਾ ਪਕੜੋ ਬਾਹੇ
ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੀ ਅਬੋਡ ਆਫ ਹਿਊਮਿਲਿਟੀ ਆਲਸੋ ਸੇਜ਼ ਦੈਟ ਓ ਲਾਰਡ ਪੇ ਅਟੈਂਸ਼ਨ ਟੂ ਮੀ ਮਾਈ ਸੋਲ ਇਜ਼ ਇਨ ਦ ਮਿਸਟ ਆਫ ਦਿਸ ਓਸ਼ਨ ਆਫ ਲਾਈਫ ਇਫ ਯੂ ਵਿਲ ਨਾਟ ਪੇ ਅਟੈਂਸ਼ਨ ਟੂ ਮੀ ਆਈ ਵਿਲ ਗੈਟ ਡਰਾਊਨਡ ਇਨ ਦਿਸ ਓਸ਼ਨ
ਫਿਰ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਮੈਂ ਅਪਰਾਧੀ ਜਨਮ ਕਾ ਨੱਕ ਸਿੱਖ ਭਰਾ ਬਕਾਰ ਸੁਰਤ ਕਰੋ ਮੇਰੇ ਸਾਈਆਂ ਸਾਈ ਸ਼ਰਨ ਅਵਾਰ
Further, he says that I am the sinner since my birth and I am full of dirt in my nose and in all my body. Pay attention to me, O my Lord. If you will not pay attention to me, I will get drowned.
Ajayb ne bhi dil par ke, akhaan par ke, karpal de ge, ehi khad ke keha, ke tel tel da apradhi tera, rati rati da chor, pal pal da main gun hi paraya, bakshi abgun meor.
Ajayab also stood in front of his master with his eyes filled and with his heart filled. And he also said the same thing, that I am your sinner moment after moment and I am your thief moment after moment. I have taken refuge in you. You forgive my faults.
Lekin saadi aam logan di ki halat hai, jada si man de daire vich baithe hain, jive kise sutra fakir guru ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੇ ਹਰਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੇ ਜਵਾਨੇ 'ਚ ਉਹ ਪੈਦਾ ਹੋਏ ਸੀ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਤੱਕ ਉਹ ਰਹੇ ਕਾਫੀ ਲੰਬੀ ਉਮਰ ਸੀ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੀਆਂ ਕਾਫੀ ਸੰਤ ਮਤ ਦੇ ਮੁਤਾਲਕ ਖਾਸ ਰਸ ਦੀਆਂ ਗੱਲਾਂ ਆਉਂਦੀਆਂ ਹਨ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਕਿਸੇ ਤੋਂ ਪੁੱਛਿਆ ਵੀ ਮਕਾਨ ਕਿਸ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਮਜ਼ਬੂਤ ਹੋ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਬਈ ਅਗਰ ਮਕਾਨ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਥੰਮ ਲਾਏ ਜਾਣ ਤਾਂ ਮਜ਼ਬੂਤ ਹੋ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ। ਉਹਨੇ ਇੱਕ ਸਾਈਡ ਤੋਂ ਥੰਮ ਲਾਉਣੇ ਸ਼ੁਰੂ ਕੀਤੇ, ਸਾਰਾ ਮਕਾਨ ਥੰਮਾਂ ਨਾਲ ਭਰ ਦਿੱਤਾ। ਬਾਰਿਸ਼ ਹੋਈ, ਸਰਦੀ ਪੈ ਰਹੀ ਸੀ, ਬਾਹਰ ਖੜ੍ਹਾ ਕਿਸੇ ਨੇ ਆਖਿਆ, ਉਹ ਭਲਿਆ ਲੋਕਾ ਤੂੰ ਅੰਦਰ ਚਲਿਆ ਜਾ, ਕਿਉਂ ਬਾਹਰ ਠਰ ਰਿਹਾ ਹੈ। ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ, ਅਗਰ ਅੰਦਰ ਜਗ੍ਹਾ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਮੈਂ ਇੱਕ ਹੋਰ ਥੰਮ ਨਾ ਲਾ ਦਿੰਦਾ। ਕਹਿਣ ਦਾ ਭਾਵ ਕਿ ਹੁਣ ਜਿੱਥੇ ਅਸੀਂ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਨੂੰ ਬਿਠਾਉਣਾ ਚਾਹੁੰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਉੱਥੇ ਤਾਂ ਅਸੀਂ ਦੁਨੀਆ ਦੇ ਖਿਆਲ ਭਰੀ ਬੈਠੇ ਹਾਂ, ਮੈਂ ਮੇਰੀ ਨਾਲ ਉਸ ਜਗ੍ਹਾ ਨੂੰ ਭਰੀ ਬੈਠੇ ਹਾਂ। ਅਸੀਂ ਸੋਚਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਕਿ ਅਗਰ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਬੈਠਣ ਦੀ ਕੋਈ ਜਗ੍ਹਾ ਹੋਵੇ ਤਾਂ ਅਸੀਂ ਦੁਨੀਆ ਦੇ ਖਿਆਲ ਇੱਥੇ ਹੋਰ ਨਾ ਭਰ ਦੇਈਏ।
ਗੁਰੂ ਅਰਜਨ ਦੇਵ ਤੋਂ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਤੋਂ,
ਗੁਰੂ ਹਰਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਤੋਂ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਤੋਂ।
What is the usual habit of we, the ones who are easily swayed off in the wave of the mind? Our condition is like the condition of that Sutra Fakir, who was a very famous poet of humor, and he was the initiate of Guru Har Gobind, and he lived up to the time of Guru Gobind Singh Ji. He had a very long life, and once he asked someone that how to make the house stronger, somebody advised him to put many pillars in the house. So he went on putting the pillars in the house, and he filled up the house with all the pillars, and it started raining. So he was standing outside, somebody came there and asked him that why he was standing outside, why didn't he go in the room. He replied that if there was any place for me in the room, in the room, I would have put one more pillar. So like that, if there was any place in our mind, we would have filled it up with one more worldly desire. Our condition is like that Sutra Fakir, that we have filled up our mind with all the desires and there is no place left for the master to go and reside there.
ਕਿਉਂਕਿ ਉਹਦਾ ਅੰਦਰ ਪਰਦਾ ਖੁੱਲਿਆ ਹੋਇਆ ਸੀਗਾ, ਅੰਧ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸ ਨੂੰ ਨਹੀਂ ਮੰਨਦਾ ਸੀਗਾ। ਇੱਕ ਦਫ਼ਾ ਆਪਨੇ ਬਹੁਤ ਲੰਬੀ ਕੋਈ ਦੋ ਦੋ ਤਿੰਨ ਤਿੰਨ ਫੁੱਟ ਦੋ ਬੂਟ ਸੰਭਾਲੇ ਔਰ ਰਾਤ ਦੇ ਵਕਤ ਮੁਸਲਮਾਨਾਂ ਦੀ ਮਸੀਤੇ ਇੱਕ ਬੂਟ ਸਿੱਟੇ ਆਇਆ ਔਰ ਕਿਸੇ ਨੂੰ ਕੋਈ ਪਤਾ ਨਹੀਂ। ਸੁਬਹਾ ਮੌਲਵੀ ਆਇਆ, ਮਸੀਤ ਖੋਲ੍ਹੀ, ਜਦ ਐਡਾ ਲੰਬਾ ਜੁੱਤਾ ਦੇਖਿਆ ਉਸਨੇ ਸੋਚਿਆ ਵੀ ਰਾਤੀ ਖੁਦਾ ਆਇਆ ਸੀਗਾ, ਇਹ ਜੁੱਤਾ ਉਸ ਦਾ ਹੈ। ਕਿਉਂਕਿ ਅਸੀਂ ਲੋਕ ਅੰਧ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸ ਦੇ ਉੱਤੇ ਬੜਾ ਹੀ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸ ਕਰ ਲੈਂਦੇ ਹੈ। ਸਾਰੇ ਹੀ ਪਿੰਡ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਇਹ ਗੱਲ ਤੁੰਮ ਗਈ ਕਿ ਰਾਤੀ ਖੁਦਾ ਆਇਆ ਸੀ ਮਸੀਤੇ, ਉਹ ਆਪਣਾ ਕਾਹਲੀ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਜਾਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ, ਜੁੱਤਾ ਛੱਡ ਗਿਆ ਹੈ। ਸਾਰੇ ਲੋਕ ਮੱਥਾ ਟੇਕਣ ਲੱਗ ਪਏ, ਫੁੱਲ ਚੜ੍ਹਾਉਣ ਲੱਗ ਪਏ। ਹੋਰ ਵੀ ਦੂਰੋਂ ਦੂਰੋਂ ਪਿੰਡਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਲੋਕ ਆਉਣ, ਸ਼ਰਧਾ ਲੈ ਕੇ ਵੀ ਖੁਦਾ ਦੇ ਜੁੱਤੇ ਦੇ ਦਰਸ਼ਨ ਹੋ ਜਾਣ, ਵਾਰੀ ਨਾ ਆਵੇ। ਆਖਰ ਕੁਛ ਟਾਈਮ ਤੋਂ ਬਾਅਦ ਸੁਥਰਾ ਕਹਿੰਦਾ ਫਿਰੇ ਕਿ ਵੀ ਮੇਰਾ ਕੋਈ ਜੁੱਤਾ ਲੈ ਗਿਆ ਚੁੱਕੇ, ਇਸ ਨਾਲ ਦਾ ਕੋਈ ਜੁੱਤਾ ਲੈ ਗਿਆ ਚੁੱਕੇ। ਉਹ ਆਏ, ਲੋਕਾਂ ਨੇ ਕਿਹਾ ਵੀ ਇਹਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਦਾ ਤਾਂ ਮਸੀਤੇ ਵੀ ਪਿਆ ਹੈ। ਆਖਰ ਉੱਥੇ ਉਹ ਗਏ, ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ ਵੀ ਤਾਂ ਜੁੱਤਾ ਮੇਰਾ ਹੈ, ਕੌਣ ਲਿਆ ਹੈ। ਆਖਰ ਉਹ ਜਿਹੜੇ ਮਨਮੁਖੀ ਆਦਮੀ ਸਨ, ਅੰਧ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸੀ ਸਨ, ਉਹ ਸ਼ਰਮਿੰਦੇ ਹੋ ਗਏ। ਸੁਥਰੇ ਦਾ ਸਮਝਾਉਣ ਦਾ ਭਾਵ ਇਤਨਾ ਹੀ ਸੀ ਕਿ ਬਈ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਲੋਕ ਅੰਧ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਲੱਗੇ ਹੋ ਕਿ ਖੁਦਾ ਦੀ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਕੋਈ ਦੇਹ ਸਮਝਦੇ ਹੋ। ਖੁਦਾ ਦੀ ਦੇਹ ਨਹੀਂ, ਵਜੂਦ ਨਹੀਂ, ਔਰ ਉਹਦਾ ਕੋਈ ਰੂਪ ਨਹੀਂ, ਰੰਗ ਨਹੀਂ, ਰੇਖ ਨਹੀਂ, ਪੇਖ ਨਹੀਂ। ਨਾ ਉਹ ਮਸੀਤ ਨਾ ਬੱਝਿਆ ਹੈ, ਨਾ ਉਹ ਚਰਚ ਨਾ ਬੱਝਿਆ ਹੈ, ਨਾ ਕਿਸੇ ਮੰਦਰ ਮਸਜਿਦ ਗੁਰਦੁਆਰੇ ਨਾਲ ਬੱਝਿਆ ਹੋਇਆ ਹੈ। ਉਹ ਹੈ ਤਾਂ ਇਨਸਾਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਇਨਸਾਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਬੱਝਿਆ ਹੋਇਆ ਹੈ।
His inner veil was lifted up and he did not believe in the blind faith. Once it so happened that he got very big shoes made, about 2 feet long, very big shoes. And he went to one mosque and left one of his shoes over there in the night time. Next morning when the Maulvi, the priest of that mosque, saw a very big shoe over there, he thought that maybe last night God was visiting the mosque, and while he was going back in hurry, he has forgotten his one shoe there. So he announced that, and people from far and near started coming there. They started bowing down to that shoe. They started offering flowers and things to the shoe. And that became a thing to worship. And after some time, that Sutra went around asking people if they had seen his missing shoe. He was carrying another shoe, and he asked people if they had seen any shoe like that. The people who had visited the mosque, they had seen that shoe over there. So they said that, yes, a shoe like this is in the mosque. He went there and asked them that who had brought the shoe there. He took that shoe and went away. He wanted to explain to people that they are having the blind faith and they do not go for the reality. He wanted to tell people that God is not bound to any mosque, he's not bound to any church, he's not bound to any gurdwara or any temple. If he is there, he is bound with the love of the devotees, he is within the human beings, he is within the devotees of God.
ਇਸੇ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਇੱਕ ਵਾਰੀ ਆਪ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਦੇ ਸਤਸੰਗੀਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਸਮਝਾਉਣਾ ਚਾਹੁੰਦੇ ਸਨ ਕਿ ਇਹਨਾਂ ਦਾ ਕਿਤਨਾ ਗੁਰੂ ਬਾਣੀ ਦੇ ਉੱਤੇ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸ ਹੈ, ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇ ਬਚਨਾਂ 'ਤੇ ਵਿਸ਼ਵਾਸ ਹੈ. ਆਪ ਇੱਕ ਦੁਕਾਨ ਤੋਂ ਸੌਦਾ ਉਧਾਰ ਲੈਂਦੇ ਰਹੇ. ਉਸ ਦੁਕਾਨਦਾਰ ਨੇ ਸੋਚਿਆ ਇਹ ਅੱਛਾ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਦਾ ਸ਼ਿਸ਼ ਹੈ, ਇਮਾਨਦਾਰ ਹੈ, ਇਹ ਮੇਰੇ ਪੈਸੇ ਤਾਂ ਰੱਖਦਾ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਗਾ. ਆਖਰ ਜਦੋਂ ਕਾਫੀ ਸਾਰੇ ਪੈਸੇ ਸਿਰ ਹੋ ਗਏ, ਉਹਨੇ ਇੱਕ ਦਿਨ ਪੈਸੇ ਦਿੱਤੇ, ਪੈਸੇ ਮੰਗੇ, ਉਹਨੇ ਬਜਾਏ ਪੈਸੇ ਦੇਣ ਦੇ ਸੁਥਰੇ ਨੇ ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਧਮਕਾਇਆ. ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ ਕਿ ਵੀ ਮੈਂ ਤੇਰੀ ਸ਼ਿਕਾਇਤ ਗੁਰੂ ਕੋਲ ਕਰੂੰਗਾ. ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੇ ਬਾਣੀ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਕਿਹਾ ਹੀ ਹੈ ਨਾ ਕਿ ਤੇ ਲੈ ਲੈ ਮੁਕਰ ਪਾਹੇ. ਤਾਂ ਉਸਨੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਕੋਲ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਗੱਲ ਕਹੀ ਕਿ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਜੀ ਮੈਂ ਇੰਨੇ ਪੈਸੇ ਲੈਣੇ ਹੈ, ਅਗਰ ਮੈਂ ਉਸਨੂੰ ਤੁਹਾਡਾ ਡਰ ਦੇਣਾ ਚਾਹਿਆ. ਉਹ ਕਹਿੰਦਾ ਗੁਰੂ ਦਾ ਬਾਣੀ 'ਚ ਲਿਖਿਆ ਹੋਇਆ ਕਿ ਤੇ ਲੈ ਲੈ ਮੁਕਰ ਪਾਹੇ, ਕਿਉਂਕਿ ਤੁਕ ਸੁਖਮਨੀ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਆਉਂਦੀ ਹੈ. ਤੋ ਜਦੋਂ ਉਸਨੂੰ ਸੱਦਿਆ ਉਹਨੇ ਤੁਕ ਪੜ੍ਹ ਕੇ ਸੁਣਾ ਦਿੱਤੀ. ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਭਾਈ ਅਗਲੀ ਤੁਕ ਪੜ੍ਹ. ਹੁਣ ਅਗਲੀ ਤੁਕ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਇਹ ਲਿਖਿਆ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਤੇ ਮੂਰਖ ਖਾਹੀ ਖਾਏ. ਸੁਥਰਾ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗਿਆ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਜੀ ਇਤਨੇ ਸਾਰੀ ਇਹ ਸੰਗਤ ਬੈਠੀ ਹੈ, ਅਗਲੀ ਤੁਕ ਇਹ ਪੜ੍ਹ ਲੈਣ, ਮੈਨੂੰ ਤਾਂ ਉਹ ਹੀ ਠੀਕ ਹੈ. ਇਸੇ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਸਾਡੀ ਹਾਲਤ ਇਹੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਅਸੀਂ ਜੋ ਸੰਤਾਂ ਦੇ ਬਚਨ ਲਿਖੇ ਹੈ ਆਪਣੇ ਮਤਬਲ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਤਾਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਢਾਲਦੇ ਹਾਂ. ਮੈਂ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ ਦੇ ਵਕਤ ਇਹ ਦੇਖਦਾ ਰਿਹਾ ਹਾਂ ਸਤਸੰਗ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ, ਜਦ ਤਾਂ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਿਰਪਾਲ ਨੇ ਇਹ ਕਹਿਣਾ ਜਾਂ ਸਾਵਣ ਨੇ ਇਹ ਕਹਿਣਾ ਬਈ ਹਰ ਇੱਕ ਨੂੰ 2.5 ਘੰਟੇ ਭਜਨ ਕਰਨਾ ਚਾਹੀਦਾ ਹੈ, ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਪਵਿੱਤਰ ਬਿਤਾਉਣੀ ਚਾਹੀਦੀ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਮਿਹਨਤ ਕਰਨੀ ਚਾਹੀਦੀ ਹੈ, ਸਾਰਿਆਂ ਨੇ ਚੁੱਪ ਕਰਕੇ ਬੈਠੇ ਰਹਿਣਾ, ਜਦ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਨੇ ਕਹਿਣਾ ਕਿ ਬਈ ਅਭਿਆਸ ਕਰੋ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ, ਭਾਵੇਂ ਤੁਸੀਂ 2 ਮਿੰਟ ਕਰੋ, ਉਦੋਂ ਸਭ ਨੇ ਹੱਥ ਜੋੜ ਕੇ ਨਮਸਕਾਰ ਕਰ ਦੇਣੀ, ਸ਼ੁਕਰ ਹੈ. ਉਦੋਂ ਹੱਥ ਸਭ ਨੇ ਸਿਰ ਬੰਨਣੇ ਔਰ ਸਿਰ ਨਮਾਉਣਾ ਜਦ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਨੇ ਬੋਲਾ ਬਚਨ ਕਹਿਣਾ. ਸੋ ਇਹੀ ਹਾਲਤ ਸਾਡੀ ਹੈ.
ਵਾਂਸ ਇਨ ਆਰਡਰ ਟੂ ਮੇਕ ਦੀ ਡਿਸਾਈਪਲਸ ਆਫ ਗੁਰੂ ਗੋਬਿੰਦ ਸਿੰਘ ਜੀ ਅੰਡਰਸਟੈਂਡ ਦੈਟ ਹਾਊ ਦੇ ਸ਼ੁੱਡ ਅੰਡਰਸਟੈਂਡ ਦ ਬਾਣੀ ਆਫ ਦ ਮਾਸਟਰ, ਹੀ ਡਿਡ ਸਮਥਿੰਗ ਵੈਰੀ ਇੰਟਰਸਟਿੰਗ. ਹੀ ਵੈਂਟ ਟੂ ਵਨ ਸ਼ਾਪ ਐਂਡ ਸਟਾਰਟਡ ਗੈਟਿੰਗ ਥਿੰਗਸ ਫਰੋਮ ਹਿਮ ਔਨ ਕ੍ਰੈਡਿਟ. The shopkeeper thought that he is a good disciple of the master's, so no problem, after some time he will pay him. But he did not pay him even after a long time. So once he asked for the money, so Sutta Fakir said that, well, why should I give you any money? Because it is written in the bani of the master's that many people take the things from the other people and they forget about it. So why should I give you the money? And that shopkeeper told him that, okay, I'll go and complain to the master. He said, well, you should read what he has written himself. Why should I not obey what he has written in his bani? So that shopkeeper went to Guru Gobind Singh and told him that, master, this Sutra Fakir owes me a lot of money. And whenever I tell him to give me the money and when I tell him that I will go and complain to master, he says that he has written in his bani that many people take and forget about it. So he tells me like that. What should I do? Guru Gobind Singh then called for Sutra Fakir and asked him that why he was not paying him. He replied that, master, it is written in Sukhmani that many people take and forget about it, so why should I pay him? So Guru Gobind Singh told him that, well, you should read the other part of that hymn also. And it says in the other part of the hymn that many foolish people take and eat of others. So Sutra said that, well, this first part is good for me and the other part may be good for other people. So he wanted to explain to the disciples that we should take the complete verse of Guru, of the masters, and understand it, and that all applies to us. I have seen in the time of Master Kripal Singh that when Master would say that every satsangi should meditate for at least 2.5 hours per day, and they should keep their lives pure, they should keep the diary and things like that, then nobody would even nod their head and say that, okay, that's all right, we'll try to do that. But whenever he would say soft words like that every satsangi should do the meditation, be it for 2 minutes per day, and they should try to keep their lives pure, then people would fold their hands and said that, we are very grateful, we'll try to do that. So people don't accept and try to do the hard words, the hard commandments of the masters. They become very grateful to the master when they say the soft words.
That talk was given on May 9th, 1984 at Sadbari Ashram in Sanbrinton, New Hampshire. Our closing bhajan is on page 264. Kripal ki mehama. The glory of Kripal is limitless. I sacrifice myself millions of times. He removes the darkness and manifests the light. He shows the way to all those who have lost the way. On every single step, he extends support. He removes the pain and causes happiness to shower. Whoever comes to the door of the Master gets everything without asking for it. This is the knowledge of the saints. Consider the Master before God. O madman, this body is a vine of poison. The Satguru is a mine of nectar. Hundreds of times I bow down and devote myself to him. The Master is the support of my life. Open the eyes of the inner mind. Be humble and speak sweetly. Preserve the words of the Master. They are precious, and you will be liberated. Those upon whom the Master has showered his grace have crossed the ocean of life. The Nam of the Master is the boat to cross the ocean of life in this iron age. There's no other way to swim across except the Nam. Ajay, meditate upon Kripal, and you will go across. The glory of Kripal is limitless. I sacrifice myself millions of times. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 264.
कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोट बार जावा बलिहार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोट बार जावा बलिहार हरे अंधेरा ज्योति जगाए हर भटके को राह दिखाए सदा सहारा दे पग पग पर कष्ट हरे सब सुख बरसाए हरे अंधेरा ज्योति जगाए हर भटके को राह दिखाए सदा सहारा दे पग पग पर कष्ट हरे सब सुख बरसाए बिन मांगे ही सब कुछ पाए जो भी आए गुरु के द्वार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार संत जनों का है यह ज्ञान हरि से पहले गुरु को जान यह तन विष की वेल बावरे सतगुर है अमृत की खान संत जनों का है यह ज्ञान हरि से पहले गुरु को जान यह तन विष की वेल बावरे सतगुर है अमृत की खान सत सत नमन वंदना सत सत गुरु है जीवन के आधार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार अंतर मन की आंखें खोल झुक कर चले और मीठा बोल गांठ बांध ले तर जाएगा गुरु का वचन बड़ा अनमोल अंतर मन की आंखें खोल झुक कर चले और मीठा बोल गांठ बांध ले तर जाएगा गुरु का वचन बड़ा अनमोल जिन पर दया करी गुरुवर ने वही उतर गए भव से पार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार गुरु का नाम है कलयुग में भवसागर की नाव नाम बिना और तैरने का और कोई नहीं उपाय गुरु का नाम है कलयुग में भवसागर की नाव नाम बिना और तैरने का और नहीं कोई उपाय अजायब जप कृपाल को उतर जाएगा पार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार कृपाल की महिमा अपरंपार कोटवार जावा बलिहार
The name of the Master is the boat to cross the ocean of life in this iron age. There is no other way to swim across except the Nam. Ajay, meditate upon Kripal, and you will go across. The glory of Kripal is limitless. I sacrifice myself millions of times. May God bless us all.